We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to The Scorecard.
The manly sport of golf, where you can dress like a pimp and no one will care.
Where we focus on Chicagoland and national golf news.
It's such an exciting athletic sport to whack the ball, get in the cart.
I whack the ball that goes in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like croquet?
Croquet! I put the hole hundreds of yards away!
With your hosts, Mike Esposito.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere. To lead the pack.
And multimedia golf industry insider Barry Cronin.
You take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good. So what's the problem?
I don't know.
On 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
People be quieter. I'd like to hear the grass grow.
And good Saturday morning to you, everybody. Welcome in to The Scorecard here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This hour brought to you by Chicago District Golf Association. Visit CDGA.org. A beautiful Saturday morning, Barry, here at the end of August, and good morning to you. And I tell you what, we better enjoy these nice summer August Saturday mornings before they start getting a little too chilly for some of us.
You're not kidding, Mike. I often wonder what's going to happen to the outdoor dining in November. So yeah, and I agree with you about this is the waning last 6 or 8 weeks of the golf season. Hopefully we get a nice warm October and we can continue to play golf. But another great day and a good Saturday to get out there and hack it around.
Absolutely. And not that this was a planned topic of any kind of the show, but I seriously wonder how this is going to work with the weather, because if people can get out there and play or do outdoor dining or do whatever it is, I think people are going to do it, and I would be one of those people. So.
Oh yeah, I agree with you, Mike. And as you know, we've talked about this a number of times on the show all summer. Golf courses are full of people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's a little public muni course or a real fancy high end exclusive club. The golf courses are mobbed with people. It's just crazy. And the longer it can go on, the better for the industry. You know, the industry basically early this year lost out 56 days from the end of March until the end of May. And now they're making up for it in spades. So, it's terrific for the industry. And let's just hope summer keeps on. You know, typically, people kind of quit playing golf around here right after Labor Day because the kids are back in school, et cetera. Well, you've got younger kids, and God knows what's going to happen with school. So we could extend the season. So that'd be a good thing.
That would be. I could tell you what's going to happen, Barry. There's going to be four of us trying to do Zoom meetings here from my house starting pretty soon. So that's going to be a very interesting experience. Anyway, good morning, everybody. Welcome into The Scorecard. I'm Mike Esposito. He is Barry Cronin. 2 hours every Saturday morning. We are here for you, and we're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We have the Northern Trust going on this weekend, Barry, in Boston at the TPC Boston. Some low rounds yesterday. And I don't know that I've ever seen a 59 and a 60 shot in the same round, but it happened yesterday.
Right, and it did. Scottie Scheffler, who last year won the Evans Scholars Invitational at the Glen Club, went out and shot 59. And then all of a sudden, right behind him came Dustin Johnson, who shot 27 on the front nine, and people were and then he birdied number 10 and 11. And everybody thought, wow, this guy could shoot 58 or who knows, you know, because he still had, I think, I don't know how many par fives, but I know 18 was a par five. But he went out and parred the rest of his holes from 12 through 18. He made par and kind of foolishly hit driver off the 18th tee, when if he'd have hit three wood and just laid up in, you know, hit it into the fairway, but I think his driver went too far. It went into the junk. I didn't see it on TV, but then, you know, he had to lay up and then hit on the green and he wound up making par, but there isn't any reason he couldn't have shot 59. However, I will tell you that yesterday's 59-60 brought back a few memories, because in 2010 at the John Deere Classic, Paul Goidos, I know I mentioned the John Deere Classic a lot, but
hey,
Paul Goidos went out. Yeah, he went out and shot 59 in the morning at TPC Deer Run. And then Steve Stricker, who was defending champion at the time, teed off around, I don't know, noon or whatever. Anyway, he went out and shot 60. And his comment when he came in the press room later was, well, I got to the first tee and I noticed I was 12 down. So, you know, he says, I knew I had to do something. And I remember watching him on the 18th hole thinking, wow, maybe he'll shoot 59 too. And he didn't, you know, obviously he made a par. But, yeah, but that was the last time such a thing happened. So well, it was cool to see. And it was just interesting that, you know, this is a playoff event. And, you know, it's interesting. Maybe the course wasn't set up hard enough. I don't know.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that, because you had, and I'm looking at this leaderboard as we speak, but you had a lot of low scores yesterday, a lot of low scores on the weekend. DJ is 15 under par right now,
right.
as after two rounds, 67-60, and Scheffler, you know, he starts the day at 1 under and then 59, and now he's 13 under. But you have guys shooting, you know, both of their first two rounds in the mid-60s that are, you know, they're in the top 10 of the tournament, yes, but the scores are very low. Let's just put it that way.
Well,
right?
Exactly right. And, you know, the cut came in at 3 under par. And, you know, listen, it's a you're out in the east. You know, it's not a fast course. I think they've had some weather out there. So, really, I mean, look at what they do to these courses that are inland courses, and there's not a lot of wind blowing, and the greens are receptive. They're not running, the course is not running real fast, and that's what happens, because if the course is kind of spongy and kind of wet, and the ball, you, they hit the ball off the tee, and the ball doesn't run in the fairway, then it doesn't run off the fairway. It hits, it bounces, you know, a yard or two or three, and it sits there, right? Whereas if you have hard and fast fairways, mm-hmm. if you pull it a little bit or slice it just a tiny bit, when it hits, it'll run, and it'll run into the rough. It'll run off the fairway, and that makes them for a more difficult approach. It's the same thing with the greens. If the greens are spongy, they're a little bit wet or whatever, and they're not hard and fast, the ball's going to – they fly it up in the air, 100 miles in the air, because they're all so great, and that ball hits on the green – and it sits, and it doesn't go anywhere. So that's why scores are low. That's what happened at Medina last year when Justin Thomas, I mean, they just sort of dismantled Medina, which we all know is a great golf course, but it's long, and length means nothing to them, especially when the course is not dry.
Yep, no problem. This hour is brought to you by Glenview Park Golf Club. Experience the best at Glenview Park Golf Club. Call 847-724-0250. And I should mention to our listeners, if you'd like to get in touch with us, drop us a line via text or call us. The number is the same for both, 312-644-6767. I've got the texts pulled up here in front of me. If you would like to do that, we are here to read them and talk about them. But we do have a very exciting show today, Barry. I know I was excited to see the guest list when you sent it out. We'll have, for our Swing Thoughts segment, Brett Packey will join us, former Illinois PGA Teacher of the Year. He is the longtime instructor of Nick Hardy, who's been on the show, who's playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, and also the founder of Core Golf in Libertyville. So we'll talk to Brett at 6:40. At 7:40, we'll talk to Vince Pellegrino, tournament director, out at the BMW, which is coming up fast on us here, Barry, next weekend. So yeah, we'll have Vince on to talk about all things BMW Championship. And then at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, I guess you would call it our most famous guest to date, maybe. Is that fair? Stuart Sink, the British Open champion of 2009 and longtime PGA Tour member, will join us to talk about his career and everything going on in the tour right now. He's always played well here in the city of Chicago. So that is, big name guests
good.
Here.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Our first major champion on the since we started.
That's
I think
right.
We started the week before the Colonial, so I'm not sure exactly what number show this is, but eight or nine or whatever it is. But I think Stuart definitely qualifies as our biggest name guest, and it'll be really exciting. I'm looking forward to talking to him not only about what's going on now on the tour and his great career. But also, of course, I think everybody remembers Stewart as the guy who won the British Open in 2009, and really it was the one that Tom Watson didn't win. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to talk to him about that, and I know he's such a good guy. He was a recipient of the Payne Stewart Award, which we know is character and integrity and all that good stuff. So mm-hmm. he's quite a guy, and so really exciting, really excited to talk to him.
Yeah, no, it will be enjoyable. So Stuart will be joining us right at 7 o'clock. Looking forward to that. And I mentioned Vince Pellegrino, but the BMW Championship coming up next weekend here, Barry, that was a question mark for a while, wasn't it? What's going to happen there? How is this going to work? Will there be guests? I mean, we know all the answers to all of that now, but I think, and we'll ask Vince this, as preparations are made, the final prep coming into the week, how weird this year has been, because I'm sure it's been absolutely bizarre with trying to plan a tournament and trying to deal with lots of the questions surrounding it.
Well, yes, and I know that, the BMW Championship and all the revenue that they make out there is, it goes toward the Evans Scholars Foundation to help pay the tuition of the kids that they have in college, and not to have corporate hospitality sales, not to have mm-hmm. ticket sales, not to have merchandise sales. It all adds up, and they've got to find a way to make up that revenue, number one. And number two, the BMW Championship for the Western Golf Association is kind of the big hood ornament of the organization, for since 1899 until about 2007, it was the Western Open, a very mm-hmm. proud, the third oldest golf tournament in the world after the British Open and the U.S. Open. And one of the great, great histories and a long time a major championship in the golf world. So it's going to be fun to see it out at Olympia Fields next week. Olympia Fields, a great golf course. They've got two courses out there. It'll be on the North Course. That course has hosted many, many great championships. Nicklaus won the Western Open out there in 1968. Walter Hagen won the Western Open in 1927.
Wow.
And in 1928, a guy named Johnny Farrell, who, of course, nobody's ever heard of, defeated Bobby Jones in a playoff to win the U.S. Open. And, of course, Jim Furyk won the U.S. Open out in 2003. So, and Bryson won the U.S. Amateur in 2015. So it's a great, great golf course, rich history. And unfortunately, we won't be able to even go. And Mike, you can't even, a guy like me and you, we can't even get media credentials to mm-hmm. get in there because they're limiting them so much that if they, for example, if they give one, say, to the Chicago Tribune, I'm told that that one writer will get the credential. And it'll have to be the same writer every day that comes out there. So it isn't, mm-hmm. There's no changing around at all. So that's the way it goes, and that's the way the COVID world is happening,
Such as it is. No, it's a strange world for media as well, as I'm sure you could tell, as Barry and I both do this show sitting from our palatial home studios, which for me is the back corner of the basement. But no, it is what it is, and you know what? And we've talked about this throughout the season, which, you know, with the late start and everything you mentioned, our first show was right there in early June. But having this on TV, and I know it's not going to replicate the in-person stuff, and I know it's not going to replicate, like you were talking about, for the BMW, having, you know, the hospitality tents and the huge crowds and whatever. All of that having been said, it is awesome that we do have golf on television. It is awesome that we are able to follow this, because it's been a difficult year, I know, for a lot of people. And if this is a break, a few hour break every weekend, where you could chill on the couch and enjoy some golf and, you know, pay attention to sports and kind of try to block out the whole COVID thing, and I'm going to take it and run with it.
Yeah, Mike, I didn't realize how addicted to sports I was until all this happened. You know, and I'm sitting there for 6 weeks going through withdrawal, and you know, golf, baseball, etc. So it's been a weird world. And then you're watching baseball, and there's nobody in the stands, and it's just pretty bizarre. So, and you know, one thing I wanted to mention, Mike, was one of the guys who's going to be in the field next week is Kevin Streelman, who is originally from Wheaton, and he lives out in Arizona now, but I know he still has very strong ties here in the Chicago area. He's involved out at Black Sheep Golf Club, and I know he gets around to Chicago golf, and so, where he used to caddy when he was a younger guy. Cantini, he's done clinics to benefit the Illinois Junior Golf Association. So I know that Kevin, in our magazine, the Chicago District Golfer magazine, was quoted as saying, "Boy, I can't wait to get back to Chicago to play in front of my family, etc." And now, you know, he's not going to be able to do that, unfortunately. So, you know, it's too bad. You know, I know that the Western Golf Association was holding out hope that they would at least be able to get some fans out there. You know, whether they, you know, people maybe not want to be in a hospitality booth, you know, with the buffet sitting out there during the COVID, but at least get some people on the property. And then, of course, the PGA Tour revised their policy and declared that no fans would be allowed in any of its events. I know that I will ask Vince about this later, but I know that they've loosened up the access a little bit during these playoffs. So we'll see a little bit, but there won't be any real fans and very few media.
No, and I know we talked about this. I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, but, you know, no fans at Augusta and the Masters coming up in November. I mean, this is unfortunately the reality for most everything right now, is that it's going to be fanless. So
right.
Tough going. And Kevin Streelman, by the way, 7-under through the first two rounds there in Boston. So he is tied for 20th currently with a bunch of guys. But Kevin playing his usual good, consistent golf. And as I mentioned, Barry, we will have a great, great show for you, starting with Brett Packey, Swing Thoughts at 6:40. Stuart Sink, the British Open champion from 2009, will join us at 7. And then Vince Pellegrino with the BMW Championship, as we've been talking about. Vince will join us at 7:40. We'll talk about the BMW at Olympia Fields. When we come back, we will continue to talk about the sport we all love, and we'll get back to the Northern Trust at TPC Boston, where we saw a 59 and a 60 yesterday. It's Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito. You've got the scorecard here on 670 The Score.
Cubs fans, we all miss being live at Wrigley Field.
Cubs win!
But imagine the thrill of hearing your name read live on the score as our home team hero, Cubs fan of the game.
It's our way of honoring our local heroes.
Just nominate a first responder or frontline healthcare worker who also is a Cubs superfan at 670thescore.com/hero.
Just tell us how crazy of a Cubs fan they are, and they could get a shout out during a Cubs game in September.
Presented by Proven Winners, the number one plant brand.
From Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Cubs. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Welcome back to The Scorecard with Barry Cronin and Mike Esposito on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
And we're back here on 670 The Score. Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito on The Scorecard. The Northern Trust is this weekend's tournament. We are in Boston. The Cars, Barry. 70s, 80s rock.
Did you know Rick Ocasek
R.I.P. the late Rick Ocasek.
Yes,
was
right.
Was from Boston. So we're.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I did. Now, I did now, know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're gonna feature a little Bostonian music. So that'll be good. So listen, the other thing is this Northern Trust. I was getting a little bit. I had a little whiplash today or yesterday when I was looking at this, uh-huh. and I said to myself, the Northern Trust, isn't that the one that's in New York? And apparently not, because they changed the, you know, they've shrunk the playoffs from 4 events to 3, and now the Northern Trust went from being in New Jersey at Liberty National to a TPC Boston. This happened a couple of years ago. It takes me a while to, you know, to get with the program here.
I hear you.
But anyway, fans, if you've had that, you know, that thought, like, gee, I thought, how is this? Wasn't the Deutsche Bank in Boston? And yes, it was, but then the Deutsche Bank like got in a lot of trouble for doing some stuff with the feds. That I think that's why they dropped the tournament. But anyway, so now the Northern Trust is in Boston, so that's good. And Bryson DeChambeau won there a couple of years ago, but this week he missed the cut, along with a couple other kind of big names.
I was just actually as if you were reading my mind, I'm thinking exactly the same thing. I'm like,
I think we both have a nose for news, Mike. So that's
there you
what's
go.
Going on here.
Yeah, the list of guys who missed the cut. I mean, this reads like it's like a who's who list sometimes. You mentioned Bryson, Colin Morikawa. We just were lauding him recently, very recently.
Didn't we put him in the Hall of Fame?
We said he might have.
He was a new great player, and remember how he never missed a cut when he was young? Uh-huh. Now that he's old, he's 23 and a half, he missed the cut.
Right.
What the heck?
Exactly. So Phil Mickelson missed the cut. Jordan Spieth missed the cut. Tony Finau missed the cut. And how about this? Two guys who barely made it and are paired together today for your television watching pleasure are Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. If nothing else, tied at 58th, Tiger and Rory will be on your TV screen together today.
Exactly right, and that will incentivize everybody out there to go and buy PGA Tour Live so you can get that early
right.
morning cover. As if you can't, and I don't know about you, I know I watch way too much golf, especially now. But when you watch some of these early rounds, I don't know if people have noticed, the contrast between watching guys who play early in the day versus the guys who are on the network telecast later in the day is kind of night and day, because the guys who are playing great, you know, the guys on the network telecast, they're in contention. They're playing great golf. Meanwhile, the guys that are playing early, not so great. Even Tiger, like during the PGA, you know, I always love watching Tiger Woods play golf, because at any moment he's going to hit a transcendent, unbelievable shot that you've never seen. Even while he's kind of playing pedestrian, oh no, I hit it, you know, he hits it out of bounds, or doesn't hit it in the fairway all the time. He leaves it in a bunker. So he's playing kind of uninspired golf, and then all of a sudden he'll hit some unbelievable shots. So it's always good to watch, for me, always fun to watch Tiger. But a lot of times you watch the guys who play early and you go, wow, that's pretty. Are those guys any good, or what's wrong with them? You know, but anyway, the contrast is there. Even though they're great, we tend to think they're great. I think we tend to think that the pros are great all the time, 100%, and really they're not. And they do make a lot of mistakes. So
yeah, no, and you look at all the other guys tied for 58th. Just a very quick perusal: Patrick Reed's down there, Schauffele's down there, Hideki Matsuyama's down there. Justin Rose is down there. I mean, it's not like these are, you know, guys who just rolled in off the street and are playing here. These are seasoned, excellent professional golfers. It's just, you know, we're talking about Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, two of the biggest names and two of the biggest stars on the PGA Tour. So they are, I guess the visibility is a little bit more. And as you know, as you and I talked about, hey, how about this? Because they tee off at 8:30, Barry. So you've got a nice 2-hour listen to the scorecard. Go grab a cup of coffee and then go back, flip on the TV, and there you go.
There you go. It's good. And, you know, you talk about the big names that barely made the cut, and then you've got names that, honestly, most people have never heard of. So
sure.
You've got Cameron Davis, you know, tied for second. And I think he's from Australia.
you know, Danny Lee, Harris English, those guys are kind of known. Siwoo Kim was on the leaderboard last week. Emiliano Grillo, I mean, he's, you know, whatever. Harry Higgs, mm-hmm. You know, Ryan Palmer, we've kind of heard of him. So it's Scott Harrington. I don't know. Some people, those guys are up higher than Tiger in the gang. So, you know.
Yeah, and it's one of those it's one of those things too, Barry, where, you know, we talked about Dustin Johnson earlier. He's 15 under and Tiger and Rory sitting down there at 3 under, which is where the cut line was at.
You think they have a chance?
Hey, guys, you could shoot a 10 under today, and you know what? You're still not going to be in the lead because I'm sure Dustin's going to shoot a negative number up there today. And if he doesn't, you know, you have all of those guys that you'd have to leapfrog. This is going to be one of those, I think, Barry, when it's all said and done, that you're going to be looking at 20 under plus to win this tournament, just based at least on how the course is played. Yeah,
you would think, Mike, for sure. You would think for sure.
And we mentioned that's the fun for me. I like reading weird numbers like this. We talked about Scottie Scheffler, who got the 59 yesterday. So at the start of his day, he's one under par. He's like, all right, you know, I shot a 70 in round one. Let's see how this goes here day two. You know, 59 kind of does a little for your scorecard, huh?
Well, you know what it'll do? It'll move you up the leaderboard.
Yes, it will.
It'll accelerate your progress toward the top of the leaderboard. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that was it was a great round, and certainly, and you mentioned, so a year ago he won what?
He won the Evans Scholars Invitational, which
the
was
the Evans Scholars Invitational, yep.
Right. So that's on the Korn Ferry Tour, and that's, you know, that's one of the ways that he got onto the PGA Tour. You know, when you win an event on the Korn Ferry Tour, you're pretty much, you know, depending if you, unless you play like complete, you know, crap
we know
the rest
it.
Of the
yeah.
year. is that one of the words you can't say on the radio? But anyway, I'm a rookie, so I don't know. But you know, he assured himself of getting onto the PGA
right.
Tour with that victory, and I mean, it was cool to see. You know, he won in a playoff, and boy, he's a big dude. You know, you look
yep.
at him, and my gosh, I'm looking up at him, and he's about 6'2". And
he's
he
a strapping 6'3",
like
Barry. I actually pulled it up as we're talking.
A strapping 6'3", and he went to the University of Texas, and I'm thinking,
yep.
did he play tight end at Texas, or did he play golf? I mean, my mm-hmm. gosh. So he's a big dude, and a really a great player, former U.S. junior champion, and I don't know what to say. Hallmark guy, a guy that you know is going to play well.
Yep.
Yeah, he played well in the PGA Championship. He was on that leaderboard
yep.
and in contention on the final day at the PGA and really played well.
Well, and I pulled up his profile here as we're talking. He's also another one, by the way, Barry, that'll make both you and I feel old. Born in June of 1996, so that's certainly that's
when
one of those.
When you're reporting on players who were born after your children were born, this is problematic. It's problematic.
Well, he'll make our 7 o'clock guest Stuart Sink feel old because as we know, Stuart was Rookie of the Year in 1996, and Scotty was born in 1996.
Wow,
so there you go.
Wow, wow! Yeah, we span the years, you know.
Yeah, but no, he's so 2020, his first year here on the tour, he's made 15 of 20 cuts. His average round is under 70, and he's made over $2 million already on the tour. I'd say that's not a bad start, Scottie Scheffler.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Well, pretty good.
He is tied for second with Cameron Davis, Dustin Johnson at 15 under right now after his 60 yesterday. And I think reading and watching last night, Barry, some of the coverage of this, I think people were more surprised that Dustin got stuck at 60 after the 11 under through 11 than they were that Scotty shot the 59. It certainly seemed that way anyway. The 59 is always a thing, but Dustin was sitting there and he just had to do one more bird or, you know, get anything through those last seven holes and
right.
Par golf throughout.
Right, and you know, he could have. We were actually playing golf yesterday, and a guy in the cart was looking at his phone, saying, "Wow, it looks like we're on a 58 watch, or maybe even a 57 watch for Dustin, because he had birdied 10 and 11,
yep.
and then he goes from 12 through 18, he shoots even par, and you know, he makes if he made a couple of birdies there, you know, he would have." he would have shot 58. That would have tied Jim Furyk, who shot 58 out at Conway Farms a few years ago. So, yeah, very strange. And I think it felt like after Dustin came in into the, you know, after he played and signed his card, et cetera, there was kind of like a downer. Like, oh, you shot 60. Well, that's sort of a drag. You know, it's too bad.
Yep.
It's almost like a disappointment. So,
And it had to be. I'm going to guess for Dustin, too. I mean, I saw, you know, some of the post-game or post-round stuff, and, you know, he said basically, hey, you know, it would have been great to get, you know, under that 60 mark, get a 59, get a 58, you know, something he has never done. He said, I think I would remember that, and, you know, ha, 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 when asked about that. But for a professional, and for we know how competitive these guys are, to be sitting there staring at a 59 or better. I mean, he could have shot a 57, Barry, as you
absolutely
just said. I mean, this is
easily.
This is easily. Exactly.
Easily.
So that's got to be something that's going to drive him a little bit batty. Even though he's in the lead and even though he shot a 60 yesterday, it's got to be one of those things that's like, man, I was sitting on 60 and I couldn't do anything for the last seven holes. I'd be interested to see how he starts his round today.
Yeah, but you know, he's such a guy. It's like he has no pulse. You know, he doesn't doesn't betray any sort of angst or anything, any frustration. Really, he doesn't really show anything. He just kind of goes about his business. He doesn't seem to be the kind of guy that overthinks anything. Unlike, you know, Jordan Spieth, who's out there talking to his caddy and driving himself crazy. By the way, he missed the cut. He and Mickelson, of course, both missed the cut, and I believe. And we'll have to ask Vince about this, but I believe that neither Spieth nor Mickelson will be in the field next week. But the good news is that will not affect ticket sales because there's no fans at Olympia Fields next week.
Well, and Barry, that's another story for another day, but we could talk about Jordan Spieth and the struggles of a Jordan Spieth this year. Certainly a guy a lot of people root for. So anyway, that's down the line. When we come back, as we have to take a break, we'll do our Swing Thoughts segment with Brett Packey, founder of Core Golf in Libertyville, former Illinois PGA Teacher of the Year. And then at 7, stick around for sure, British Open champion from 2009, Stuart Sink, will join us here on The Scorecard on 670 The Score.
With a shortened season and both the Cubs and Sox playing great baseball, the 2020 Crosstown Series will be more important than ever.
And David drives one in the air to the center field fence. That ball is gone.
Listen to Pat and Ron bring you all the action of every game here all weekend.
Boy, cracks this ball. Deep center field. Bring him home.
Crosstown Series coverage on The Score is brought to you by Xfinity. Xfinity XFi delivers blazing fast Wi-Fi with no curveballs. On Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Chicago Cubs. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Just let it happen. Be the ball. Be the ball, Danny. You're not being the ball, Danny.
Well, it's kind of difficult with you talking like
that. Okay, I'm not talking. Stop talking.
And now, The Scorecard presents Swing Thoughts, some free advice from the best teachers in the game.
And we are back on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito here with you on The Scorecard. And as Big Voice Guy said on the way in, it is time for Swing Thoughts. Barry, so we head on out to the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. There we find Brett Packey. He's a former Illinois PGA Teacher of the Year, lifelong instructor for Nick Hardy, our pal, who I guess we could call him that. He's been a guest on their show and certainly doing good things there on the Corn Ferry Tour. Good morning, Brett. How are you?
Doing great, guys. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Brett. Did you, I think, easy to teach Nick Hardy just by saying, be the ball, Nick, be the ball?
Well, we can go with that story, sure.
Well, Brett, obviously, Nick's had a great career, and you've put some 50 of your students are playing college golf, which is fantastic. For the average person out there, guy and gal going out and playing golf this weekend, what do you think are the better ways, some of the better ways that people could improve their games?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think obviously in today's age with all the technology that's out there and video analysis and YouTube videos and all that, you know, I think instructors and coaches are on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, 10 being all in on the technology and measuring your body pressure and your weight transfer, and just about anything can be measured nowadays with technology. And then you have, you know, some older school teachers, maybe I'm in that category, where 80% of your shots are coming from 100 yards and in. And I don't think a radar device is going to help you with the downhill lie into the grain with a putt running left to right, let's say. So,
right.
You know, very much into short game, wedge game, putting, measuring your practice. How are you improving? And your game assessment, you know, what is your putting handicap? What is your short game handicap? What is your ball striking handicap? And then on the elite level, we add mental game, wedge game, and a few other categories.
Right. So, Brett, you're teaching out and you founded the practice there, Core Golf in Libertyville, and you mentioned the whole old school thing. And, you know, Barry and I joke about it because I think I'm your age and Barry may be a few years older than us. But do you find a lot of people coming in for instruction that want a lot of the new technology stuff, or is it a nice mix? Or are you getting people that, like you said, I mean, it's short game stuff and it's not how could I hit 300, 350 yards?
No, that's right. It varies per individual. I mean, they're obviously the paying customer, and what do they want to see improve and what do they want to get better, along with, hey, here's my opinion. Here's what I think your short game handicap is, or your putting handicap is. And here's where I think we should put most of our time and our effort, whether you're a 3 handicap wanting to be a scratch golfer or a 30 handicap wanting to be a 10 handicap. So it does vary per individual for sure, based on their goals.
So how do you improve, what's the best way for some person to improve his or her, say, short game or putting or whatever, especially if they have friends involved in it too? Should they compete with one another? How does that work? What do you normally do? What have you done with Nick?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I stand on the range all day, watching students hit balls and watching members at Northmore come up to the range and hit balls and then go play. And it's such a common theme that no one's measuring their practice. If you go to the range and hit 100 balls and you're not working on a new move or a new swing or a grip change, or you're just ingraining what you already know how to do. So I think as an instructor, it becomes twice as hard to actually undo that. And so with Nick, I mean, from an early age, we started when he was 9, he would get a golf ball advantage. Let's say, we were going to hit into a bucket, hit a 20 yard shot into a garbage can. I might give him 50 shots to see how many he could make, and I would maybe take 25 shots. So he was kind of getting a 2-to-1 advantage. That didn't last long, by the way. So, and then with other students, you know, I might give them a 4-to-1 advantage on a short game shot or on a putt. You can do it with dads and kids, and then as they get better and better, it goes to a 3-to-1, a 2-to-1, and a 1-to-1. In fact, Nick was over here a few weeks ago, and my son, who's also a Nick, coincidentally, we went out on the putting green, and we played a game of horse, and we gave Nick 3 putts to Nick and I's 1 putt, and then he beat us. And so then he on the next game of horse, it went to a 2-to-1 advantage. He didn't like that, but too bad.
Well, and it sounds to me, Brett, and I think personally I would – like that environment, but this to me would bring out the best in people, that those competitive games, whatever you want to call them, as opposed to just sitting out there hacking by yourself.
That's right, and there's thousands of drills. I mean, we can do putting, we can do short game, we can do bunker, we can do at the U.S. Open with Nick 1 year, he wasn't happy with his bunker play. I went and put a ball on the putting green, sitting on a tee, and we hit bunker shots till he knocked the ball off the tee. And I think that might take the average listener half a day, but it was a great drill. It gave us a goal, and we were measuring his practice, him, you know, again, assessing his game at his level, you know, scoring average of 69.4. We're trying to get it down to maybe 69.1. And, you know, where do we find that 0.3 of a shot?
How much practice do you really have to do? Because as we know, a lot of people have to go to work. Although now in the pandemic, there's a lot of people who are not, who are working from home. How much practice does somebody need to really do in order to get really lower their handicap?
That's a great question. So like a drill, a simple drill. You go to the putting green. Take three golf balls and just putt the first one. And it can go 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet. I wouldn't care. Just putt it. Take your second ball and try to make it go the same distance as the first one. Take the third ball and try to make it go the same distance as the first two. The goal is to finish within about a grip length, which is about 11 inches from your shortest putt to your longest putt. And you'll be terrible at it at the beginning. But I bet you 15, 20 minutes into that, or day two or day three, you're going to get way better at it, which means you're starting to own the speed and the distance control of the putt that you're hitting. So, that's, you know, it could be, yeah, you know, I mean, in you know, relating it to any motor skill that we want to learn, my son wasn't exactly thrilled with his infield play this summer. And we went and hit ground balls, and I hit 50 ground balls to him a day, 3 or 4 days a week, times 3 or 4 weeks, starts to add up. Now he's way more comfortable and way better than he was 2 months ago.
Right. And so in the putting drill, the first ball you hit, it doesn't really matter where you hit it or how far or anything. That ball just becomes the target for the next two balls.
That's correct. And it's just It's really you just getting a feel for the greens and the speed and, you know, how much effort you're putting into the putt. And I've certainly have had some extremely bright high school kids hit the first ball about 5 feet, but that's not the point.
Yeah. Well, it's always the teenage view of things, isn't it? That's all good. So putting is the most important, because if you could two putt every green, you know, it just minimize your three putts. You're going to minimize your double bogeys. I think that's the one thing. And so what would be then the next most important area from a short game perspective, Brett, to work on?
Right, for sure. So I think you'd have to look at the golfer in terms of how far do you drive it off the tee and how far do you hit your approach shots. And I personally define short game as 30 yards and in, and then outside of 30 yards, we go into wedge game. So another fun drill, again, on the driving range, hit a wedge, sand wedge, gap wedge, lob wedge, doesn't matter. Hit it, you know, 25, 30, 40, 50 yards. And then usually on a driving range, it's going to bounce and roll. So if you flew it 30 yards, it might end up going 40. So wherever that ball finishes, now the next shot, you want to land where the first ball finished. And then the third ball, you want to try to land where the second ball finished. So you're just kind of playing a game of leapfrog, working on your distance control, because way too many golfers, the first thing I do with any new student is give them a sand wedge, give them a target 50 yards away, and say, hit it 50 yards. And I can tell you 80% of the time it goes 30 or 70.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think, right. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think even when you're trying to practice your wedges, et cetera, I mean, it's really hard to control the distance. I don't care. Even if you say, well, I know my 56 degree wedge goes 85 yards. Good luck doing that every time.
Oh, that's right. You know, we, on the elite level, using some radar devices, there's little combines that you can do where you hit 10 balls and it tallies up how it spits out random yardages. And it'll tell you how far each one finished from that yardage. With Nick, we set a goal of for 10 shots under 25 yards. So you're averaging 2.5 yards off the yardage. If it picks 58 yards, then 60 yards or 56 would be acceptable. But then you take that to the average level or the higher handicap golfer, then so just give it a 10-yard gap. You know, and you can put driveway markers out there on 10-yard increments, 20, 30, 40, 50. And when you aim for the 20, try to be closer to the 20 than the 30. And when you aim for the 30, try to be closer to the 30 than the 20 and the 40. And so then, you know, obviously, you know, working on wedges is very important.
And to me, it seems like you're then developing feel with all that. And really, people say what you really need with the short game is feel.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have, you know, 30 clubs in the bag, although maybe some of the listeners do. But the, you know, your 8-iron might be a 150-yard club. And it goes 150, you step up on a par 3, it's 150, you hit 8-iron, it goes 150. And you might have a sandwich that goes 100. But then you don't have a 90 club, an 80 club, a 70 club, a 60 club, and a 50 club. So you've got to make that sand wedge become 10 irons, 10 different clubs.
Our guest is Brett. Our guest is Brett Packey from Core Golf in Libertyville, founder of there, and one of the Illinois PGA Teachers of the Year, former Illinois PGA Teachers of the Year, who also, and, you know, we are loathe if we do not point this out, that you are a college golfer at Miami of Ohio. You qualified for the 1999 Western Open, so you had your playing days in there as well. And I wanted to ask you, as you talk about Nick, and, you know, we've had Nick on the show, so we are I guess you could call us fans, huh, Barry? Because
I would say we're fans and supporters. He's such a great supporters. Guy. Nick is a great guy. Yeah, wonderful guy.
Well, so that's what I was going to ask you. As a guy who played and played competitively, and now you're obviously a teacher and one of your students, I mean, you know, you don't want to just shine the light on the one guy there, but, I mean, he's out there and he's got a chance, right, to make it onto the tour. How was that for you as the teacher watching him?
Oh, it's a thrill. I mean, it's his dad and I are the same age, and we've gone through this together, and along with his mom and his sisters. Yeah, you know, when Nick got to college, I still had higher club head speed than him and still hit it further than him, and I try to remind him of that all the time. and then, you know, again, the game assessment and the measure, you know, when we used to play, you know, I was giving him half a shot a hole when he was 9, 10, 11, 12, and then it lowered, and now, kind of embarrassingly, I get 9 shots from him.
I guess that's what you want, though, right? I mean, you've obviously taught him. You've taught him well enough so that he beats you now. So there you go, right?
Yeah, it's really not even. I've told him, I think, going into this year, especially with COVID, and then how busy I've been at the club, and I told him I'm just a walker now.
There you go.
Because I played. Back in March, I played my brains out. We were in Indiana playing, and it was a 50-degree day and windy. And I shot 74. I was pretty pleased, but I lost by 11.
Wow.
And that's when Nick set the course record down at Palmyra Golf Course, which that was when Illinois was closed for golf, and everybody and the brother from Illinois were going down there and playing golf, including Nick and Brett, evidently. So it was a discovery. It was a great place to be.
Well, Brett, and we are out of time right now, but we certainly appreciate it. CoreGolf.com is your website. Some good stuff on there, and people can find out if they'd like to contact you there. Brett Packey from Core Golf in Libertyville, we appreciate your time this morning, and we'll be rooting for Nick as well.
There we go. Thanks, guys. It was fun.
Thanks, Brett.
Thanks. Brett Packey, Core Golf, Libertyville, CoreGolf.com, and we do root for Nick Carty on the Korn Ferry Tour right now, so we can freely admit that. Coming back for hour two, Barry, we will have 2009 British Open champion Stuart Sink up next, so stick around. Major champion coming up here on the scorecard on 670 The Score.
With a shortened season and both the Cubs and Sox playing great baseball, the 2020 Crosstown Series will be more important than ever.
And David drives one in the air to the center field fence. That ball is gone.
Listen to Pat and Ron bring you all the action of every game here all weekend.
Boy cracks this ball. Deep center field. Bring him home.
Crosstown Series coverage on The Score is brought to you by Xfinity. Xfinity XFi delivers blazing fast Wi-Fi with no curveballs. On Sports Radio 670 The Score, official radio home of the Chicago Cubs.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.